Water is a very important thing. Would you agree? It's not the most exciting thing in the world. Some of us like our sodas, and that's not me. Some of us like our coffees, and that is me. Some of us like our milkshakes and our Kool-Aids and all these different things. But when it all comes down to it, we need our water. And it really, even if you have to choose between food and water, the thing that you should choose is water. You need water. Sheep need water, especially when they are living in a dry and arid area. And we talked last week about the fact that many sheep live in dry, arid areas because those are the areas that are most free of pests and dangerous diseases and things of this nature. And so they are in these places, and the shepherd has to himself provide pastures that produce green grass that they can eat, and that takes work and effort. They need water. Some African gazelles, for instance, can survive just fine on the modest water they gain every now and then from eating foliage. Then you have camels on one hand who will soak up the water that they can get and fill up their humps and last for days without drinking. But that's not the way that sheep are. Sheep need water, and they need it on a regular basis. The body of an average animal, I don't know how you figure this out, but one person says, is approximately 70% water. I trust the zoology on that, I suppose. When the water supply within a sheep is low, the regular body functions that they have will begin to shut down, and dehydration will set in. They become easily agitated, less healthy, more susceptible to disease, harder to lead and guide, and just generally more weak. We are no different. I get this from the water page of the United States government, if that is reliable. Up to 60% of the human adult body is water. That's an interesting fact, which is, by the way, if you don't drink water, that's why you don't feel very good, because you're made up of water. Over half of you is water. According to H.H. Mitchell and the Journal of Biological Chemistry, section 158, the brain and heart are composed of 73% water. The lungs are about 83% water. And why is that? It's because your lungs distribute oxygen to your body. And how does your body distribute anything anywhere? It uses blood, which is a liquid. It's based on water. And so it's very important to the lungs to have water there. The skin contains 64% water. Muscles and kidneys are 79% water. And even our bones, which kind of drops the average, are 31% water. So water is a very important part of who we are. What does water do for you? A lot. It forms your saliva. You're glad for that, right? It manufactures hormones and neurotransmitters that are needed for your brain to function and your nervous system. It regulates body temperature and keeps your body temperature at an equilibrium and a balance. And it does that through perspiration and sweating and things of this nature. It's kind of a built-in air conditioning system. It acts as a shock absorber for brain and spinal cord places. And so there's water, fluids of different kinds that surround some of these key parts of your body that when you do face impact, it's that water membrane around the outside of different kinds of fluid that protects those important vital parts of your body. Water, of course, is significant in converting food to elements needed for survival. It's a very important part of your digestive process. It helps deliver oxygen to all parts of the body. It lubricates your joints, flushes body waste, and it allows body cells to grow, reproduce, and survive. It's a very important part of who you are. So you need to drink your water. Thirst is a natural indicator God has given us to alert us that our inner water supply is getting low and needs to be replenished. Thirst is not a bad thing, it's a good thing. It doesn't feel good, but it's an important thing. It's like pain. Pain is not a bad thing, it's a good thing. The bad thing is what is causing the pain. You need pain. Pain tells you where the problem is. It's kind of like that check engine light, if that works, on your car. Sometimes that goes bad and you're never sure if it's actually telling you the truth. But when it is working, it tells you when something in the car is wrong. And that's what thirst does for us. It tells us when we're running low on that very important ingredient of water. And we need to be wise to replenish. There are some times in the course of a day that I have a headache or I have some other physical weakness. And the first question I have is not what medicine do I take, but have I been drinking my water? Sometimes my wife will talk to me and tell me that she's feeling this way or that, and I'll simply ask the question, have you been drinking your water? Water's cheap. You don't have to go to the doctor to get water, and water does a lot of good things. And we have to remind each other of that. Sometimes I'll go home and I'll complain of a headache, and she'll say, maybe it's not because you had a busy day. Have you been drinking your water? Well, maybe I had a cup, and she'll just look at me. It's hard to feel sorry for somebody when they're not drinking their water. Thirst is also something that happens spiritually, not just physically. David describes this thirst in Psalm 42, verses 1 through 2. He says, as the hart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? Do you ever feel like you're running low on God? Like you need a little bit more of him? Life comes from God. Spiritual life comes from God. We're very aware of our body. Our body is good about telling us what it needs. Too good. If we even start to run out of food in our digestive system, it makes us feel like we're starving. By the way, just because your stomach is rumbling doesn't mean you have to eat. It just means your body wants you to start thinking about it. When you fast, one of the hardest times of fasting is at the end of the first day if you're going for more than a day, because that's when your body starts getting the idea that you're serious, and it starts putting up a little kick and a little fight, and it makes you feel like you're going to die. You're not. It's a fact, and that's the only thing you have to go on, knowing that many other people go through this too, and there's life on the other side. And usually the next day you wake up, if you're going longer than a day, you feel actually quite fine. And if you're deliberately fasting, that's encouraging to know. And you can focus then even in more of a spiritual focus sometimes. And the longer you go, sometimes after you get to the third day, if you're going that far, you begin to have another round of that as your body begins to deal with some of the other systems having to work that don't usually have to work. But you'll probably still be okay in most situations unless you have some physiological aspects that are preventative, and that is sometimes the case. Your body will tell you when you're thirsty, and there are different ways of indicating that, but spiritually speaking, do you ever feel like you're running short of God spiritually? Let me just put it to you this way. If coming to church is the only thing that gives you a spiritual kick in the week, you are living with thirst. You need God a whole lot more than that. Now, you need that, but you need him a lot more than just coming to church. You need him a lot more than you realize. We get used to living thirsty. We really do. And one of the reasons we do that is we find other ways to satisfy that thirst. And it's kind of like drinking soda when you should be drinking water. Soda does satisfy your thirst, at least at the tongue level, for a little while. And it's not sinful to drink soda, but know the realities. Only water will quench that thirst, or products that cause water to go into your system, like a Gatorade or something like that. This is not supposed to be a health lesson. But I'm using thought processes that we're aware of to help us think about spiritual concepts here. We satisfy our thirst, and we're going to look at that in other ways that are not really satisfying us. Jesus also describes the spiritual thirst in the New Testament, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6. He says this, blessed really are happy are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. And what is the outcome of that? They shall be filled. If you actually recognize and admit your hunger and your thirst for God, you will begin to find him satisfying that. Are you thirsty in your spirit? How do you quench this thirst? When you pursue God, He will satisfy your thirst like water in a desert. The point of this message is this: when I follow the leadership of the Lord as my shepherd, he quenches my spiritual thirst. He will. As a born-again Christian, as sheep in God's flock, I need to learn to discern when I am spiritually thirsty and then learn to satisfy that thirst by seeking God himself and following his leadership in my life. Number one, the Lord quenches my thirst when I abandon the delusions of this world. The Lord quenches my thirst when I abandon the delusions, or for the deaf world, the of this world. That was an attempt. The craziness, the foolishness. There are a lot of things out there that I would call the sodas of the spiritual life. Some of them are bad, maybe like beer and alcohol as an illustration. Some of them are okay, like soda, but you probably shouldn't be living on them. Things that promise to whet and to satisfy that spiritual thirst that we have for God, but they don't really. You see, when sheep are thirsty, they become restless and set out in search of water to satisfy that thirst. If they're not led to good water supplies of clean, pure water, they're not going to work hard to find them. They will often end up drinking from the polluted potholes where they pick up such internal parasites as nematodes, liver flukes, and other disease germs, according to this man who wrote about shepherding. We also, as Christians, have to be very careful to avoid drinking from the polluted water sources of this world. There is water in the world, but it's not pure. There are other ways to satisfy our thirst, but only in a temporary way, and usually not in a way that doesn't have negative side effects. We need to follow Jesus and to spend more time with him in the Word and in prayer, fellowship with his people and service to others. The pleasures, escapes, and sinful entertainments of this day will quench your thirst for a moment and leave you sick and guilty afterwards. Some examples. We could talk for a long time on this. I'm only going to touch on this reality. But there's the example of sensual experiences. Proverbs chapter 5, verses 2 through 5, talks about the strange woman, the woman that you only know visually and not very much at all beyond that. And taking that kind of person seriously and engaging that person in sensual ways is a very foolish thing to do. A father says to his son in Proverbs 5, 2 through 5, that thou mayest regard discretion, that thy lips may keep knowledge, for the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb. They're there, and if you're hungry physically and you're hungry even sensually, there's that honeycomb that's there, and it's dripping, and it tantalizes you, and you think, that would taste good. Let me tell you something. Does honey taste good? It does. It's partly true. It says this, the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and that's not pretend. It's true. And her mouth is smoother than oil. But let me tell you what is also true at the same time. At the same time, it says her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, and her steps take hold on hell, or the grave, or the tombstone is the idea. Sensual satisfaction outside of God's plan for your life is interesting. There is pleasure there. And one of the things we have to be careful of as Christians is not being so careful that we don't recognize the truth. Sometimes the truth is so helpful to understand and embrace. If I'm going to counsel my son when he faces challenges as he grows, I'm going to let him know, look, if you dabble in that kind of stuff, there's pleasure there. I'm not going to lie about that. But it's temporary. There is satisfaction there, but it's temporary. And the end is equally true. It's death. It's destruction. It's an internal turmoil and hurt and pain that you can't get rid of very easily. It's real. It's like a sheep wandering off after the shepherd, but getting dissatisfied with the pathway. It's too long, it's too steep, it's too bumpy, and it's too hard, and there's a pool of water right over here. I'm just going to step over here and lap my tongue in this water over here because it's available, and it's free, and it's accessible, and it's filled with germs and bacteria and diseases and animal refuse and all of that as well. It's all of that. It's water, but it's polluted water. We need to avoid dabbling in the sensual experiences that seem to meet a spiritual inner need, because they will only temporarily meet that need and will leave many side effects. How about the example of intoxicating beverages? The Bible says in Proverbs 23:31-32, "Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright." And it's referring to the kind of alcohol that alters your mind. We're not talking about the kind of stuff we drink at the Lord's table, whether Welch has made it or whatever. We're not talking about juice that drips out of the vine. We're talking about the kind that sits around for a while and is treated and affects your brain. It says this, "At the last, it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder." And you can read more in that passage about what happens. You see things you never wanted to see, and you do things you never wanted to do. I heard recently of a man in India who jumped off into a tiger's cage and jumped in, and next thing he knew it, he was down in that place with the tiger all by himself at the zoo, and no one got to him. And the conjecture is the man was drunk. You think he wanted to be down there? And that's where he was, and that's where he ended too. And that wasn't his plan for the day. That's what alcohol does to a person. It will alter your mind. The Bible tells us as believers, we are in a battle. We're in a war. And the war is serious. It's a war for souls, and it's a war for life. Keep your mind clear. Don't intoxicate it. Don't alter it. If you can avoid altering your mind, do it, because you are serving the King of Kings and you're in the battle of battles. This is an eternal battle. Keep your mind clear. You play around with that, there might be pleasure in the moment, but the same would be true of taking illicit drugs and so forth. There might be pleasure at the moment, but the end is awful. There's destruction there. There's disease, and there's hurt and pain. And there's so many other sinful choices, the results of other sinful choices. Hebrews 11:25, the Bible says of Moses, he chose to suffer the affliction of the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. My father used to tell me there is pleasure in sin for a season. How long does winter last? A few months. How long does now fall last and spring and summer? Just a few months and it's over. There's pleasure, but it's for a season. Proverbs 14:12 and 16:25 says, "There is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. But every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lusts and enticed. And when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. And when sin is conceived, it is finished. And when it is finished, it brings forth death." Let us learn to turn away from the allure and the convenience of sin and learn to follow Christ to the source of true life and satisfaction. Before you take the steps to engage in drinking from the polluted pools and ponds of this world, remind yourself that yes, the path might be long, it might be steep, there might be bumps and rocks in the road, but if the shepherd's in front of you, you're going the right direction, and there's cool, clear water at the end, the kind you can drink to your heart's content and never feel guilty about, and have every reason for it. And let me just apply that to the singles and the married couples here. The kind of pleasures that God builds into a marriage relationship, there's no limit to that. But it is for the marriage relationship. You keep it there. I heard someone say on a number of occasions in my past life, a preacher used to say, purity continues after marriage. It doesn't end at the wedding altar. You're pure after you're married, and you're pure all the way through. you don't keep yourself pure until marriage. You keep yourself pure until marriage, and you're pure after marriage too. It's all pure, and it's all exactly right. You can trust God. God is telling the truth. Jeremiah 2:13 says this, though, "For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and they have hewed out for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water." Is they're going around looking for water in these big dugout holes in the ground that are cracked and don't even hold water, and when they do, it's awful. And they're going down there and drinking this stuff when they have the fountain of life right over here that never ends. They can have all of it that they want. And they've left that. And I think we've done that in the church today. We've left finding our satisfaction in the Lord. I would commend you reading, if you've never read much of a man named A.W. Tozer, I would commend you reading A.W. Tozer. He wrote a lot of books. I have my eye on a collection of books, and one of these days I'm going to break down and get it. I love reading A.W. Tozer. A.W. Tozer was the kind who didn't really care what people thought about him when he preached. I also know that A.W. Tozer, if you ever snuck in, and I've heard this from reading and listening about his life, if you walked in on his sermon preparations, you would find him sometimes laying on the floor in tears, asking the Lord for fresh bread from heaven, asking the Lord to give him what he needed to say. And that was the secret. It wasn't his intellect, and it wasn't his verbose knowledge of the Scriptures, though he had a knowledge of the Scriptures. It wasn't his personality, because even that was weak. It was the fact that he spent time with God and he was sharing that with others. The pursuit of God is an excellent place to start in reading him. The pursuit of man, the attributes of God. A.W. Tozer is a great resource for you if you're thirsty spiritually. He'll point you to Jesus. I recommend him. And one of the things you'll find as you read him is his frustration with the church, even back in the mid-1900s, of running after the pleasures of this world when Jesus Christ was sitting by. And even then, that was before video games and the internet and all these other technological developments and amusement parks that we have today and all the things that we have available to us today. Some of these things may not be wrong, but we somehow think that these things are so important and these things are going to really meet the need of our heart, and they really don't. Jesus can meet that need. 2 Timothy 4:10 says this, "Demas," this is Paul talking, "Demas has forsaken me," a man who had been serving with him, "having loved this present world, and is departed unto Thessalonica, Crescens to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia." He loved the things of this present world. Do you value time with God over time online? Time watching television, chatting with friends, or going out shopping? If you have to choose, or I should say this, when you have to choose, what do you choose? Is it the Lord? And if it's not, I guarantee you, you're more thirsty than you realize. I have to be careful that I don't get distracted by sports scores and these kind of things. In the morning, I want to know who won the game last night and this kind of thing. I need to go to the Word, and I have to fight that. I'm being honest with you. I have to fight that. Sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. And I'm going to tell you, when I lose, I'm thirsty. Some of you are smiling. That's not a temptation to you at all. You think it's utterly ridiculous. It is utterly ridiculous. But I'm just being honest with you. But I tell you, when I take the time and spend it with the Lord full out, I never lack. I never walk away saying, boy, I wish I hadn't have done that. I never feel guilty. I never feel bad. I feel good. The other way around, I have some interesting information in my head and kind of satisfied me, but I sometimes feel guilty. You know what I'm saying? And it may not be sports scores for you, but it's something else. Maybe it's just the phone itself, checking the Facebook and all that. That may not be wrong, but where really are we finding our satisfaction? Somewhere along the line, we've stopped spending time with God in a serious way. And you stop doing that long enough, you're going to find you have more diseases than you realize. You're going to find that. Number two, not only does he quench my thirst when I abandon the delusions of the world and put him first, he quenches my thirst when I spend time with him in the morning. If you're a shepherd, one of the things you would know is that the best way to hydrate your sheep is to get them up early in the morning when the dew is on the grass. That's free water. And it's right there. It's cool. It's refreshing. A good shepherd will kick the sleep. He'll get up with the sheep, and he'll go out and take them to the dew on the grass, and he'll let them eat to their heart's content. And then, after the breakfast is done, the sheep are able to rest and make it a good portion of the way into the day with no more need for refreshment. Because the grass that they ate and the dew that was on it quenches that thirst. Dew is the most still water of all, and for a sheep it is very refreshing. We need to follow the Lord into time with him early in the morning as well, before the cares of the day surround us. David says in Psalm 63, 1 through 2, O God, thou art my God. Early will I seek thee. Let me put it this way to you. What does it say in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt have no other gods before me? How do you know if God is your God, really, practically? Do you put him first? How do you know if you put him first? Do you really put him first? You say, what do I mean? On your daily schedule, do you put him first? David says, O God, you are my God. How do we know that? Early will I seek thee. My soul thirsts for thee. My flesh longs for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is, to see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. Do you have moments and times in your life where you wake up or just in the course of the day and you don't quite know what to say? You say, God, I want to see you do more. God, I want to see you work in a more powerful way. I want to see you intervene in a more significant way. I want to see you more, Lord. I don't know you enough. Show yourself to me, Lord. And sometimes I feel like I don't get very far in my prayer time, and that's all I'm saying. You ever feel that way? God loves that kind of heart. Just cry out to him. Put him first. It's easy for us to say, I need to sleep, and sometimes we do. I'll read my Bible and pray later in the day. I'll catch it on a lunch break. I'll catch it in the car, or I'll catch it. I mean, honestly, really, some of our schedules are not conducive to this very easily, but we need to fight and do what we can to have some quiet time with the Lord at the beginning of the day, because you are probably not the most successful at anything else, really. Because the day winds up, and once it gets started, it gets harder, not easier, to find time with him. It is so important. A period of time like this, and you will find yourself very thirsty spiritually, not spending that time. Oh, you may try to rely on a diet of occasional preaching and teaching at church, but that only goes so far. Without meaningful time with the Lord each day, you will be easily allured by the polluted pools of water that the world offers you so frequently. This is true for children. If a child can read, a child can have devotions, parents. They don't have to read chapters, although maybe they could. Start with a picture Bible. You say, it's not really the Bible, it's a summary. Start with it. That's better than waking up to cartoons. Give them their picture Bible. Let them read it. You say, well, they can't read. Well, maybe read it to them. It is worth it. Children can have devotions, and we can too. My wife is very good about that. The children have their devotions, and she picks some passages at the beginning of the week, and they read through those, and they have some time. And it's a good thing. I would encourage you to make that a priority. You say, you don't know how busy we are. Well, maybe I do, and maybe I don't. We're all busy. But if God is your God, he is the one that's sitting on your shelf. And he is the one that you're putting first. Do you spend time with the Lord in the morning? That quiet time, that personal time. Do you pray? Do you read the word? Do you take some time in reading the devotions? And couples, let me challenge you also to consider doing something together as well. If you can work that out, it goes a very long way in drawing your hearts together to the Lord. Number three, he quenches my thirst when I follow him into difficult places. He quenches my thirst when I follow him into difficult places. Oh, the Lord is wanting to lead us to streams of water, cool and clear and flowing crystal water. Water that is fresh, spring water. Water that is flowing from the mountaintops. Water that is living water, not polluted, not stale, not stagnant, not lukewarm. That's what he's wanting us to drink. We need to follow him. But sometimes that water is in hard-to-get places. A good shepherd will work hard to locate fresh water springs below the ground in these arid areas where it's needed. He may dig a deep well and then forge a pathway down into it where he can bucket out the water to the sheep. It is a dark and steep place down in these cisterns, but if a sheep will follow the shepherd down there, they will be served cool, fresh water. When God leads you into deep, dark, difficult moments of life, follow him into them. It may seem uncomfortable and dangerous, but he will always meet you and refresh you there. Some of the greatest moments of refreshment in the Lord will occur in the darkest, deepest, most difficult moments of life. There are times that you follow the shepherd and he doesn't take you to this picture-perfect, serene, rippling brook of clear water bouncing over the pebbles with a meadowlark chirping in the distance. Sometimes he takes you into the desert and he walks you out to a big old hole in the ground. And you look over and it's deep. Now he dug the hole. He found the spring. He broke his back to do it. And he even forged a little pathway, little as it may be, that winds around that cistern down into the bottom. And if you throw a pebble down there, you can hear it bounce down in the bottom. But it's dark. And the path is steep and narrow. And it's scary. And you hear his voice down there saying, "Come on down, 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 come down, down." No, I'm not going down there. If you will, and you meet him down there, it's quiet, it's still, and his presence is with you. In our American way of life, we avoid the difficult places. We don't like the trials. We don't like the hardships. We don't like the challenges. We have this idea that if we're a mature Christian, bad things don't happen to me. Oh, no. You better watch it. I'm going to warn you. If you want to take steps of faith and start walking with the Lord and get serious about making God your God, I want to warn you. You're going to face challenges. God will start doing things to chip away. He's going to take you to difficult places. He's going to expose elements of your life you didn't want to touch. He's going to lead you into challenges that take you beyond your human abilities. He's going to put you into places, as we've looked on Sunday mornings, that may damage your reputation in the public eye. He may remove things from your life or cut things out that were precious to you. But those are the times that cause you to draw near to your shepherd. If he ever calls you to bear a cross, realize he will carry it with you. He's already done that. You don't have to go down by yourself. Job says this, after reflecting on the day that this man who had built up a very successful life, he had a reputation that was known the world over. He was a good man. He was a righteous man. He was a respected man. He was a man that everyone thought well of. And for good reason, he was a righteous man. He had sons and daughters who were growing into maturity, and he had resources that were opulent. He had bank accounts that would never run out. He could write a check and never have to balance the checking account. I mean, he had successful businesses running side by side. He had all the wealth that you could want, and he had a beautiful wife and a wonderful house, and life was good. And on one day, all of that was taken away through a tornado, to a band of robbers who came through and savagely killed his children and took away his animals. It was an awful day for him. And he came down with leprosy and was relegated to the lowest degree of human existence. And his wife, who was apparently married to him for the things that he had, looked at him and said, "Curse God and die, husband." And he said, "Though I die, I will not curse God." In Job 23:10, he says this, "But he knoweth the way that I take, and when he has tried me, I will come forth as gold on the other side." If you avoid the difficult places, you will avoid the very transformation that he wants to accomplish in your life. If you look back over your life the last 10 years and it's been pretty rosy, maybe ask the Lord to change some things. Maybe you're too comfortable. Maybe he wants to challenge you. A football player who's never had pain and never broken a bone in his body is probably not a very good football player. He may be big, he may be tall, he may have muscles, but he may not be a good football player. It's the one that knows pain. It's the one that's been hurt. It's the one that's been through it. God wants to take us to some difficult places. James 1 in verse 2 says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse kinds of temptations." Oh, there are all kinds of ways that God can challenge us. There are all kinds of circumstances we can face. And I'm sure at the top of our list of things that we don't want to experience would be something like, "I don't want to have cancer," or something like this. Or, "I don't want to lose my children." Or, I don't want to lose my job. And we have these short lists of things in our lives that we hope doesn't happen to us. I'll tell you what, maybe they will, but there's something about God. Sometimes he just has this way of allowing a trial into our life that we never thought about before. Something that is so unique and so out of the blue. And he says, "I'm going to challenge you on this. This is a blind spot that you have, and I want to teach you something." And you say, "Where did that come from? I don't know anyone who's going through that. I've never heard of that, or I must be a unique case." You're not as unique as you think you are. But the Lord knows what you need. Don't ask for hardness. Don't ask for difficulties. Simply ask the Lord to make you like him and tell him not to hold anything back. I challenge you. Best as I can as a pastor, I'll help to guide you through that. But the Lord is there. Your shepherd is there, and you just follow him. Keep your nose on your shepherd and follow him. We are so prone to avoid difficulties, but sometimes the hard decision is the right decision. Sometimes the choice that you believe will ruin your life will actually revolutionize your life. If you run away from trials and difficult choices, you will run away from a close, refreshing, invigorating walk with Jesus. Jesus is with you in the darkness. Remember when David stayed away from the dangers of battle? When he decided to stay home in his palace when all the other kings and rulers went to war? When all of his men and soldiers were out on the front lines losing their lives and shedding blood and getting beat up for the kingdom of Israel? And what was David doing? He stayed home. And what happened? He avoided the difficulties, and he fell into sin, into the pools of pleasure of this world. It says, "And it came to pass," 2 Samuel 11:1, "after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle." Have you ever been in battle? Have you ever had to pick up a sword and chop at people, stick at people? Kill people. Have you ever had to do that? That's not a fun thing to do, I take it. I've never done it myself. I'm not really asking to do that. But I tell you what, it's not a pleasant experience. I know that kind of stuff is on computer games, and I'm not going to necessarily talk about that right now, but that's not the kind of thing that we should glamorize. It's not fun. You want to pick up a sword and go at it? Start chopping people's heads off and running? Look, battle is not a fun thing to do. It's something to avoid. I mean, I don't want to run into battle. You avoid it at all costs. David did. But spiritually speaking, the Lord wants us to march into battle. We have to oppose the enemy and take steps of faith going forward. So important. And if we step back, I tell you, if you step back from your devotions, you step back You say, well, there's a time I used to, you know, knock on doors and give out tracts, and I've gotten so busy. You say, I used to be more excited about and faithful to church, but now I have this situation. You better be careful about that, because if you're not advancing on the enemy, you're not standing still. You're losing ground, because your shepherd doesn't stop. He keeps marching. He doesn't stop and say, okay, whenever you're ready to grow spiritually, I'll start working again. No, he keeps pulling. He keeps working as a shepherd. He keeps leading the way, and you better catch up to him, or you're going to get really tempted to start drinking from the wrong places. As a church and as individuals, let us learn to draw near to Jesus, to follow him into difficult situations, because it is there that we will find the cool, invigorating refreshment that our souls so desire. Sometimes the movie or the television show needs to be replaced with a little bit more time in the Word of God. Sometimes, I don't know what other, that and then online stuff, computer games, that's a lot of what we do with our time. There's a lot of things we can do, a lot of things. But let us just stop sometimes and take stock of the things that we're doing. Could we spend a little more time with Jesus? Could we spend a little bit more time in his presence? Could we take a little bit more to the Lord in prayer? Could we love on him a little bit more? Look, husbands, would your wife feel like you care about her if you spend as much time with her as you do with Jesus in a week? And he's more important. Wives with husbands, do you give as much attention to your husbands as to Jesus as you should to your husbands? Would he be satisfied with that? Can we increase? I don't want us to walk out of here with guilt. Here's what I want to do. I just want to challenge you that there is satisfaction with Jesus, and you will never go wrong for spending more time with him and finding ways to do it. Your children will not go wrong for spending more time with Jesus if you can work that out. Fight to make it happen, because as you follow Jesus, whether it's avoiding the pleasures of this world that are unnecessary or at best or wicked at worst, whether it's not following him in the difficult places and just avoiding any trials, or perhaps it's just not spending time with him in the morning, could these be things that we lay before the Lord and say, Lord, would you help me to grow in this and follow you as my shepherd and find my satisfaction in you? The Lord, he is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down. He makes it possible for me to lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside the still, refreshing waters. Next week, Lord willing, we're going to look at verse 3. He restores my soul. It's a great phrase. And he does.